Hello, I'm Katrina Collier. I am, of course, the author of The Robot Proof Recruiter, and it is the social recruiting show because it's 3 o'clock on Friday. I'm, of course, joined by my gorgeous co-host, the talented talent acquisition professional that is the one, the only, the amazing Glenn Martin.
Hola.
You didn't do it. I was waiting for it. This week, we're super excited to have Dr. Tim Sparks on the show. Doctor, I feel like I need to behave. Welcome to the social recruiting show.
Thank you very
much.
I've been told you're mischievous, so I hope you let all your mischief out.
Oh, man.
Not all of it. That'd be dangerous.
Damn, but it's Friday.
Man, I'm seriously nervous about asking the first question. Okay, so, Tim, how does your current role...
Okay. While he's doing that and he's off on one, I believe you're a business psychologist, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
I'm a business psychologist, that's right.
Okay, so how does that impact? No, he can't even do it.
To the recruitment industry. How does that relate to the recruitment industry? Man, I need a drink.
It is Friday afternoon. So how does business psychology influence the recruitment industry? Generally, I'm an assessment psychologist, so I specialize in improving candidate role fit through the science of occupational psychology.
And in layman terms,
all right, so using a variety of different techniques and methods to make sure that you're choosing the right person for the right job, past instinct and gut. So you have a more informed, evidence-based approach to deciding which person is the best person for the role. So once the recruiters source the shortlist or long list of candidates, I get involved in casting a different and or many different lights onto the individual so we better understand them and predict what they're going to be like in the workplace.
Should that start earlier before we've even gone to market and found people, like maybe with the hiring managers? Hang on, because the show topic, right, is talent, a person to value, not a resource to manage.
Absolutely.
So I'm thinking going... Well, I could be wrong, but I'm just wondering if we're going about that the wrong way rather than we find the people and then... Because half the time, the hiring managers give us really strange job descriptions.
So, yeah. So in terms of the title of the show, I'm a QNX talent, and we look at what I call the light and dark of human nature in the workplace. Typically, recruiters are finding a person for a job, and they try to look at their strengths. How many recruiters do you think balance that by looking at the dark side of that individual, their derailers and their development areas, and provide a transparent and honest understanding of that person to the client?
I think that'd be difficult. Certainly, if you're talking about kind of desk side recruiters, surely that would be more applicable to maybe an assessment centre. No? Do you think that is it possible to do that at a kind of desk level?
Well, first of all, be careful about any sentences that begin with surely. What I would say.
Yeah, okay.
So, right from the beginning, when you're looking through your database of potential candidates, do you have an understanding of not just their skills, qualifications and experience, but say their mindset, what kind of culture that they'd be better suited to? Do you have a database of that? Do you ask them why they have left certain organizations? People usually leave organizations for two things, not the organization, their line manager, and the organization's culture.
Go on, Katrina.
It's all right. It's just that fascinating thing of I don't think most organisations know what their culture is.
Right, so that's where I come in.
Yeah. Right.
So I can help provide
quantitative... So you are coming in back further, because I'm just thinking we should be back at the beginning. To me, that's, let's start with the people we have before we add any more.
Well, where is the beginning and who is the client, the candidate or the organisation?
Okay, so I'm actually talking about a company hiring using in-house recruiters. I think you're thinking we're just talking about agency recruiters because there's two lots. So the show's aimed at both sides. Right. So let's just talk about it that we've got a company and they need to hire somebody.
Yes.
I'm just thinking maybe we should be focusing more on hiring managers. Do they actually know what they want?
Right, so let's go to the organisation side of the equation then.
Yeah,
so
that's what I'm trying to...
Firstly,
does that help agency and in-house recruiters anyway, because they're the ones that have to fill the role.
Right. So I've been brought in. I've heard a lot of recruiters say, oh, yeah, I've got a really good sense of the culture. And I will ask either the client or the recruiter, so what's the culture? Mm. Oh, it's collaborative, collegiate. And they can't really go past that. It's one of my hobbies, that's saying describe the culture. And they can't go past that.
Is that the mischief, Jean? Just a light and making them go,
yeah. Yeah, can do attitude.
Yeah. What does a good answer sound like though?
What's a can do attitude?
Can do what exactly?
And
you unpack it and unpack it. With different techniques such as psychometrics, use of certain types of structured interviewing with many different people, you can get an understanding of the culture of the organization, but also the culture of the group in which the individual would be going into. And now one thing I'm really passionate about is, why don't people give the psychometrics to the line manager as well as the individual?
Right.
Yeah. Good point.
Why don't we have a look at where are the issues in terms of how they're going to get on, where the tensions are going to be, because forewarned is forearmed.
And also because that would help in the whole diversity thing that everyone keeps going on about, but not hiring your own, actually going, okay, I've got strengths in this, I need strengths in that. And so like Glenn and I, in a random way, balance each other out on this show because he loves structure and I don't. So it's like he has the strength where I don't. I have a weakness.
So how do you describe the culture of the show? Anyway, no, that's another thing. But
hilarious.
Hilarious. Yeah. Can do hilarious.
Yeah.
I think can do hilarious. Can do chatty.
And so what I can do is add articulate in a very quantitative manner what the philosophy, what the culture of the organisation is. Now, if you're recruiting, particularly the younger generation, they want to know almost as much about the job. They want to know more about what the culture is, what the philosophy of the organisation is. And to be able to articulate that in your job spec is going to make a massive difference to your attraction.
Yeah. Can I just say, I think the oldies want that as well, but they don't ask for it because we grew up in a different time where it wasn't so visible.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I'm just going to argue. Can I just give a shout out really quickly?
Yeah.
Adminta. Oh my God, Alexa just started talking to me and scared me. Avninda Semi is viewing from Kenya. Hello.
Nice. Yeah.
That's so cool.
With her RPO.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Sorry, cool. I just felt the need to shout that out. I'm so sorry. So the culture of the show is fun.
Good.
Just in that short section there, Tim, there seems like a lot of kind of activities. So assessment of the hiring manager, assessment of the candidate, then comparing the two, looking at building up the kind of culture, the team ethic, et cetera. For some companies who have not even thought about that, where would you suggest they start? Where's the starting point for starting to think about the implementing this kind of assessment and thought process around the business and teams? It seems massive.
Well, a culture is a combination of the people in the organisation, as well as the structure of and the processes in the organisation. So I'd be starting with simply asking them, using structured instruments and methods to then gather the information, the data, the evidence to give back to them about where their culture is. But most organisations are actually interested in where they want to take their culture, where they want to move it to. The problem is that they then will, as Katrina said, recruit for people who are like them. One of the things I do is look at the group mindset, not the individual, and then see where the gaps are, where the strengths are, but more importantly, where the blind spots are, so that we can recruit people or we can start looking not just at skills experience, but also attitude and mindset to fill that gap, to make that culture more whole.
Is there a? I was just thinking, timelines, because I like structure, Katrina. I was just thinking, Yeah.
You know that's going to be the video freeze frame now, me going.
Yeah, that it probably is. Yeah,
every time. I mean,
if somebody wanted to do a kind of pilot project of this, because obviously, you know, I don't know, 50, 60, 100,000, 800, you know, whatever size of the company, is there a particular sort of pilot number of individuals that you would start with, and what sort of time frame would you potentially put around that project? I'm just curious, because to think about maybe a
the culture.
Yeah. So do you start with a small pilot project, or is this something you roll out across the business? Because obviously it can be incredibly complex, right?
It can be. It really depends on the organization. I mean, the company could be made of 10 people. It can be made of 100,000 people. For the larger ones, that requires quasi-random sampling. So depending on where you're recruiting the individual into, you want to, first of all, look at the immediate culture around that individual and who they're going to speak to, not as in 360, but multi-source, the clients, the suppliers, whoever they're going to be involved with, how they're going to work. How they're going to work is so important. If you look at CV, if you look at CV, it's all about what an individual has achieved, not how they've achieved it.
Or a list of skills if they don't know how to write their CV, which is most people.
Yeah.
But
absolutely right, not the actually, how and not the...
Actually, how you go about it is so much more important to tenure and success in terms of productivity and engagement.
Would companies perhaps argue that the CV is the introduction and actually the how is assessed through the interview process? I'm not saying it's accurately assessed, but they might argue that, okay, that's the entry point, and the how they've achieved, we will gather that information through a standard interview process.
What do you mean by standard interview process, Jane?
Yes.
Oh, Jane. No. a set of competency-based questions, a framework of competency-based questions, probably aligned to...
Oh, here we go.
Yeah, exactly. I love this bit. Probably either aligned to values or the kind of work that they'll be doing in a particular role or team.
Yeah, there are obviously... necessary but not sufficient criteria to meet a job demand. And then in terms of technical skills, for example. But then when you go to experience, particularly in today's business landscape that's shifting and moving about so much, to what extent do you think competencies are relevant?
Well, they must have a genuine relevancy, surely. Because so many companies have, you know, they've built their interview framework on competencies. So if you're sort of saying how relevant are they, you're probably a number of companies are going, well, that's completely how we interview.
Well, Boyatzis introduced competencies in 1982. Do you think they're still relevant today?
Probably not.
In today's shifting business landscape that's all volatile, uncertain and complex and ambiguous?
Definitely not.
In fact, one of the biggest predictors is not competencies but mindset today. Obviously,
they should bin them straight away.
RIP competencies.
So obviously, it should be mindset. So mindset, for those culture. Who aren't in a position to hire you, bring you in, pay for all the tools, which is some people, are there any things, like, are there any questions that you could throw out there that people could use for mindset? Yeah, sorry, I'm trying to make a difficult question. See how we go. You know what I mean? Like, how do you, other than, you know, doing tests?
Right. So Q and X. I said the light and dark side of human nature in the workplace. A lot of organisations have taken Carol Dweck's work, for example, in mindset, and translated it to the organisation. Not successfully sometimes, because Carol's work has been mainly in education curricula. But what they're interested in is how people have failed. And how they've recovered from that failure, what they've learned from that failure.
CVs, so asking a question around, give an example where you failed and what you did to kind of get someone thinking.
Yeah. So if you're focusing on just the success factors, you're only getting half the equation of that individual.
Well, and probably a load of bullshit as well.
Who are obviously exaggerating. And that's the
that's
next
a much better term than what I said.
also that's what I would recommend if you can't afford it. Mm. Encourage to look at the negative side, the development side, the learning side, the dark side. We all have strengths. We all have development areas. If there's a candidate who says, don't have any development areas, so I'd be querying that one. But also, there are derailers as well. Derailers are, we have some derailers that are hidden, that we don't show, but could really take us out of our careers or take the company down if we're not careful.
Can you expand on that with an example?
Yes. Imagine the line manager, I'm not thinking about anyone in particular, who's politically...
Is it possibly a previous line manager? No, sorry, Joe. Look, I want to see the mischief side. I got told you have mischief, but I'm not saying it. Bring it out.
We're only 15 minutes in, Katrina. Plenty of time.
Would it be anyone I've met? No, sorry.
Warming up. Imagine a line manager who is politically savvy, who is very nuanced in understanding the unspoken politics in the organisation and gets ahead that way. Mm-hmm. Now, if that line manager is going to get stressed, the political savvy becomes an overstrength. It becomes a derailer. And then that person becomes paranoid. That is a derailer. A derailer is an aspect of us that can't be compensated for by strengths. It's very difficult to let go of or close that development area. You just need to be aware of it, either when you're very stressed or when you're very relaxed.
How do people find you holding up a mirror to them with these derailers? Because perhaps they may actually see that kind of political savviness as a strength.
A derailer starts off
as using it though.
A derailer starts off as a derailer starts off as a strength. It's when it gets overused that it becomes the derailer.
Overcompensate. Isn't there a BBC program at the moment that's all about that was somebody being bullied at work and how subtle it is? It sounds a lot like those lines. I haven't watched it, but the program is all, they basically make this guy feel paranoid because they undermine his self-esteem with all these little comments. Everybody in the office, it's like this big political move.
I think I know which one you mean. I think it's on ITV, actually.
I don't watch.
Well, you know. Parity on the channel.
Yeah, I don't watch television. I just watch the hashtag social recruiting show. So that's my only source.
That's all you need, right?
It's like a game they play, but I think it's a bit like the office politics.
Right. So that's an example. I'll give an example. I'll bare my soul. One of my derailers. Are you aware of your derailers? One of my derailers is excited volatile.
Okay.
So I get very excited about ideas, about Glenn will tell you, innovation, new ideas, new methods. I have to be careful that I don't then just leave that and move on to the next exciting idea.
Mm-hmm.
Being aware of your derailers helps.
Yeah.
So coming back
to... my derailer, I would call a negative. I'm very good at self-sabotage. So I will avoid doing something if it's going to bring up like a fear of rejection, for example.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's probably the opposite in a way though, but it can derail me.
It's not uncommon, as you're probably aware. And Glenn, I think you're the odd one out in terms of not bearing your soul.
Yes, you're absolutely right. One of my derailers. I think an inability.
How did this become about us?
This is what happens, right? So,
Katrina's no one is a psychologist.
To Katrina's point, I do feel like I do need a certain level of structure. So, you know, certainly, you know, the social recruiter show and the fact that it's just very much a chat show, you know, I do find myself thinking I need some pointers before the show starts. I need that structure. And this is a constant joke between us both because we are opposite ends when it comes to that. Katrina can just roll on, free will, she's fine. I'm sitting here thinking, you've got this question, and you need to ask this question. So that in itself...
I make them up as I go.
Yeah.
So what you've both talked about there, or Glenn in particular, you've talked about what your preferences are versus your non-preferences. And that's what I help organisations do in terms of working in their culture. understanding what the preferred work style is for that culture. If you want someone with lots of structure in an organization that's fly by night, lots of ambiguity, then they're going to have a breakdown. So they might be able to do the job, but they're in the wrong context. That's where I help. One of the ways I help.
One of the interesting things that we touched upon just previously, and it just stuck in my mind, was when people are interviewing and you're talking about really exploring their perhaps their failures and how they reacted to that, isn't there a kind of almost like a culture of not highlighting your failures? Certainly in an interview, I think people would feel incredibly uncomfortable about talking about their failures unless they really embraced them and really owned them and really felt like they'd learned from them. And certainly to your point around the hiring manager, and do they have the kind of capability to understand the value of somebody realizing they failed but having learned from that? I just wonder how easy it would be to kind of implement that into a kind of consistently into interviews, and how comfortable people might be with that.
Right. So I didn't do my job because it was easy. I chose my job as the managing maven of talent. Maven is someone who's a trusted advising expert to teach others. Part of my role is education. If a candidate sent a CV in about what all their failures were and how they learned from it, they would stand out by miles compared with the other candidates. And there is this, this area of authenticity. Would you want someone who's authentic and honest and true? Because in the end, if we're talking about talent as a person to be valued, that's where authenticity comes in. You want to choose the right person, not just for the right job, but for the right person. You don't choose the wrong person because they will suffer.
Yeah. And then they'll leave and then the business will suffer. Or they might do a good job and the business will suffer.
Interestingly, do you know where the word talent comes from?
I don't know, but I can't say I like it.
It's from ancient Greek or ancient Roman, meaning it's a type of currency or a strength.
Oh, nice. That goes back to the title of the show.
Yeah. Doesn't it? Nice.
And
it's on the screen as if on cue.
And manage comes from the Latin manus, which means to control. It actually is the original Latin is manus, hand. So a manager originally was a controller, and a talent as an object to be moved around. Now that is why we shouldn't be considering talent as a resource to be managed, if you want to go to the etymology of it.
There's still some organisations doing that.
Yeah, totally. Totally indeed.
So I help organisations make more evidence-based, data-centric, informed decisions, which are balanced between the strengths and the development areas, so that when the right individual comes in, everyone knows what the playing field is in terms of how they can be supported, because everyone comes with risks. Everyone comes with development areas. Very few people are honest about that.
So say I'm sitting in HR and I'm hearing what you're saying and I'm like, yeah, this is a marvelous idea. However, can't get the buy-in from the C-suite. Because all they see is cost, right? So
So if you're thinking of shareholders... Cool. Do you want shareholders?
Oh, no. I mean, like, they're just senior managers. So it's small companies. Let's forget the... That's
not right, so they're not going to put
the money just
in.
More, how am I going to, as HRD or whichever, get to the point where I get the buy-in from the C-suite to go, sure, let's invest in something like this, or at least work out the personality traits of our teams? Or
personality, preferences, cognitive ability.
How do you get the buy-in? Like, what's the return?
If you're a strategic HR director, you would be providing a business case for it, and that business case would be based on the history of people leaving, of poor productivity, low engagement being a real issue in the UK at the moment, and being able to demonstrate that. And that's where HR should be coming to its own with its data nowadays, to demonstrate that it's worth at least having a go.
Why is engagement so low in the UK? The weather? sorry. It is brightening up. I'm just curious. Like, I don't tend to meet people that are grumpy about doing their job. So I'm kind of like, why
is engagement?
I
don't know. It could be a number of reasons that are sociocultural. Glenn, over to you.
Yes. Thanks for tossing that hot potato my way, Tim.
Yeah, you just mentioned it. I'm like, maybe we need to have someone to talk about that. But I just, yeah.
What about the assessment tools that are available? Because you kind of touched upon this, and you know, you and I have kind of worked on this in the past, and you've actually, you know, kind of created a new assessment tool. But because of the plethora of assessment tools out there, psychometric assessment tools out there that I think are probably quite reputable, companies use quite consistently. Do you feel like those, like the competency-based framework piece, need updating? And if so, how do companies go about that? I mean, how do, you know, the providers go about that? Is that a big question? I don't know. I mean, I'm just kind of thinking the tooling must change to accommodate the sort of change in the workforce and workforce assessment.
Yeah, you use the tools and the instruments for what you need, and the need can vary greatly. So you change which tools and instruments you use, but the tools and instruments are just an initial platform, and even they are abused. And that then comes back to the you valuing talent as a person, not as an object to be assessed. So I know that there's an Australian bank who really is myself abusing preference psychometrics as a sifting tool, which it shouldn't be. The results of a psychometric, for example, on preferences, should be used to inform later stages of the selection process. I'll give myself an example. If I give anyone else an example, I'll probably be taken to court. If you look at my profile, you'll see that I'm a massive introvert. And as a psychologist, I don't particularly like people. And you would not select me to go on stage. You certainly wouldn't choose me to go on the social recruiting show if you just looked at my psychometrics. But if you looked at my psychometric profile and then had a more informed interview looking at my preferences and non-preferences and found out that I had developed strategies to overcome my non-preferences to be effective on stage 50 times in 1 year, then you'd realise that actually that is really useful. So it's about being more informed so that you appreciate
Hope that someone could look at that and go, well, actually, I know many, many introverts who are very happy on stage because they don't like the networking in the room.
Precisely.
They'd much rather be up there, get in front of everyone in one go, get it over with, and they can go and recharge their batteries. So
and his,
I'd hope that they would see that as well and kind of use some...
You would hope.
Not just the paperwork, use some experience and some...
Yeah, and to get the best out of a person rather than out of a resource, you need to understand that person. The line manager needs to understand that person. So my line manager, knowing my personality, would make sure that after being on stage, I worked from home for 2 days. Happy bunny.
Sorry, Tim. Go on.
So that's just one example of appreciating the person can actually be beneficial to both the person and the organisation.
Yeah. It is nice to see a little swing towards understanding the introversion side, because very strangely, I'm just a very loud introvert. So I'm fine. I can do the social bubble when I can see people that I know. Don't make me network a room. I hate it. But I always need the downtime. So after the Rec Expo and HRG Summit yesterday was just a washout. I just needed to be on my own. And I love it. Then it's nice to see companies actually starting to realise that even though they might have louder voices, that actually they don't want to work sitting on an open plan office. There's a flick around from that again, which is quite nice. Back to, actually, people might need a little hiding space.
I'm just thinking about this. I mean, and the kind of incredible work you can do directly with a business. And I'm just thinking along the lines of the channels that people are sourced and introduced to that company. And perhaps how broken that might be. Because if I think about like a desk level recruiter, they don't have these tools, they don't have this training, they don't have the kind of assessment tools in that first conversation. So they're almost screening on a CV and a kind of box ticking exercise. I just wonder how many people that are really ripe for a business that could be fantastic contributors don't even get a chance to get presented or interviewed. So is there any way of kind of circumventing that, providing a solution? Because I think if you think about it, so for an enterprise company, they've got like, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 agencies, which are routes for people into that business. And they don't have any of these assessment tools. I mean, how many, kind of individuals that could really make a massive impact don't even get a chance to get assessed or talked to? How do companies address that piece?
That's a bit depressing for 3:30 on a Friday. Jesus, Glenn. You thought recruitment was broken. It's more broken than you thought.
Well, yeah, there is that kind of realization when Tim's kind of talking about this really great work.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, when I started in recruitment, you as well, we were like on the phone, assessment against CV. We had an instinct around, I don't think that you could not call that a scientific assessment.
Yeah.
But we got it right more times than we got it wrong. But you multiply that and you put in people that don't get it right more times than they get it wrong. And
also, I'm forgetting, remembering you are here, Tim, but what I think Tim's also saying is that you need to know how to use them. So it's not just a case of, okay, it'd be great if we did assess as if we're agents, recruiters, but we also need to really understand it and how to apply it, right?
Absolutely. It can start with asking the right questions. Again, it comes back to the education piece, rather than going through a tick box. Part of QNX Talent's role is to reduce the false positives and reduce the false negatives in terms of making sure that you don't put the wrong people through and making sure you actually do capture the right people.
So I was going to say, do you work with recruitment agencies as well? Not just businesses, but can you work with recruitment agencies as well?
Absolutely, I'm discussing. I'm talking with a recruitment agency at the moment, and a recruitment agency in Ireland. I can't name. Higher up. They're interested. They developed some software that looks at skills, qualifications, and experience, and nothing else. They don't have a psychologist on the team, so I'm talking to them about expanding the profile and understanding of the individual. At the organizational level, I've worked with companies, well, there's one company in particular, where they wanted to future-proof the organization and assessed each of the 3,600 employees just on preferences and mindset, so that they had a proper map of the organization, so when they go shifting around, after Brexit and stuff like that, they know where to place an individual. And that's what I'm all about, is transferability of skills.
So that sort of helps with the retention then, doesn't it?
Exactly. And the engagement.
Actually leads quite nicely. Nancy Zucker, hello from New York City. I probably just said Zucker, it should be Zucker, but apologies, Australian, can't pronounce anything. Hiring top talent is challenging. I've helped many hundreds of clients to do that, but how do you, in brackets employer, keep that top talent? Flowers do not grow without water. Corporate culture and fit are key ingredients. Just jumping in. So, but that's actually what you were just saying in a way, isn't it? The transferable skills to keep people rather than let them go.
Yeah, so one question, I have lots of questions. One other question I have is...
Glenn, you're no longer lining up guests.
What is replacing the performance appraisal? What is replacing the performance appraisal? It's supposed to be dialogue. How many managers are trained in how to do proper dialogue on an ongoing basis with their people? That is how to retain your top talent, to have a proper dialogue. And there's a brilliant book, if anyone wants to read it, called Time to Think by Nancy Klein. The best decisions are made when you've done the best thinking. Now, in today's business world that's so fast moving, how much space and time do organizations and line managers give to their top talent to think?
Yeah. And also, I think that's where it's nice to have a coach as well. So I get this hour with mine once a month to take all of the ideas and just stop and pull them in and go, okay, what are we discarding? What are we keeping? Where are we going? And that's that time, I think you're talking about, to stop.
Yeah.
To give yourself time to think. And it's like companies are reluctant to do that, aren't they?
They are, because it's time and time is money, but it's a false investment when they keep moving without stopping to reflect. It's actually one of the characteristics of high potentials, irrespective of sector or industry, is the self-reflection bit on a regular basis.
Yeah.
That's becoming increasingly difficult. So a line manager who has skills in dialogue, a line manager who has skills in listening, we all go around with unspoken assumptions that actually are quite dangerous and lead us down a path that we shouldn't be going down if we all spoke those assumptions. That's how
it's... We kind of develop into our own little echo chambers, don't we?
Exactly.
As well. Exactly. And I think the latest political, which we won't go into too much, but the latest political situation is a clear example of we were in our echo chambers, because many of us are sitting here kind of gobsmacked that it happened. Mm-hmm. Or what else is going on in other countries is happening, and it's that same thing, isn't it?
Exactly.
That you need to break out and talk to others.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We go around with three types of assumption. One is the absolute assumptions of what we know about ourselves and our worlds around us. The next is what we consider to be almost facts, and the other one are facts. But they're all from our perspective, from our subjective perspective.
Yeah.
So they come with assumptions. And if we don't have proper dialogue, then they'll go unchecked, dangerously sometimes.
That's a key consideration for hiring managers, right? It strikes me that the workplace, given the fact that it's moving and changing so quickly, to be a manager now, to be a leader now, is far more challenging. There's so much more to consider, even the generational aspect. Where would somebody start with that kind of consideration? No,
that it's starting at the beginning before, like if you're going to promote somebody, so they go, oh, Glenn's a brilliant engineer, we'll promote him. And then he's suddenly got a team, doesn't know how to manage anybody. And they just let them sink.
I totally get you. But there are individuals that are managers now that have been managers for 10 years and have never done this type of work.
Well, exactly.
And probably think that they don't need to. How would you approach them?
I'd ask them. I'd ask them to look at their workforce. Do they think they're successful, and why, compared with another group? Simple as that.
Ooh, ouch!
And then how would you? Because their evaluation of success might be linked to the business profitability output. Do you think they're the right measurements? Would they be the right measurements for success?
Why not? Because productivity will be linked to engagement. Engagement will be linked to the relationship with the culture and the line manager. It's an end product, an end outcome. But sure, if you want to know why it's not as good as it should be, then you would want to go back and look at the culture, the engagement, the satisfaction, etc.
Yeah.
This is really interesting. KPIs, key performance indicators. Mm. Why are we looking at those? Why don't we look at what I call KBIs, key behavior indicators? Get those right, everything else follows. Sounds simple.
Give us an example.
Yeah, we need an example.
To work effectively in an organization, organization A, you don't want any bullying. Bullying itself being a symptom of stress. So if someone is bullying to get their results, bullying their team to get their results, the results might be high for the first few months. You might see them drop off as people start to leave the organization. Then you discover there's bullying. That's an extreme, but that's the wrong behavior. Have the right behavior. A line manager, you mentioned the different generations, who has that dialogue with the different generations to understand them, as well as them understand the manager, who's transparent, understands where the manager is coming from. You have a relationship where productivity and engagement grows. Key behavior indicators.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of them is taking the time to actually have a conversation and listen. Another's just being forced just to get on with it, kind of thing. Exactly. Like the old carrot and the stick.
Yeah. Yeah. And then
I mean, the world of work has changed quite fast in a very short period of time.
Oh, yes.
And it's so really,
it's in like my career, it's changed because it was carrot and stick before the internet and before you could see into companies and see what they were like and see how many jobs were out there. You could really treat people like shit and they'd just stay because there was a fear about leaving. You didn't leave without another job and you couldn't really see how many jobs were out there. And it was, yeah, so the world shifted.
Yeah.
And then there's mental health, which is very, very big. There's been a big focus on mental health over the last couple of years. I don't know if you know Maslow's hierarchy of needs. That states that to be able to realize and fulfill your potential, you need to feel secure.
Yeah.
You need to feel safe.
Yeah.
And if you're not bringing the whole of yourself to work, and there are many people who don't because of LGBT, because of neurodiversity issues, then they don't feel like they belong. Having that dialogue, helping you to understand the full person as the full talent as a person to be valued rather than a resource to be managed will result in greater productivity.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a lot to consider for a company.
I know.
Important, it's huge.
Hey, if you want to be an average company with average earnings that will last 5 years, fine. If you want to be a real star company, put the effort in.
Ka-ching!
Cue business card.
No, but I think it's true. I really do.
You got to work harder in the business landscape now to be successful as a company, right?
I don't think it's
harder. Maybe that's the wrong word. Sorry.
I think it's smarter. I think it's been, I've been very open about my child's abuse and things like that, and I've worked through it. So I've been to a coach, straight therapist who's worked me through it, and you get confronted with things that you have to, like you're saying, that mirror, that looking at yourself, seeing your behavior, and how are you going to change that, what needs healing and what doesn't. But it's just once you start doing that, actually the results are so much better and life is so much easier. So if you think of that from a work perspective, you start clearing, seeing yourself, your flaws and your strengths, etc.
Yeah. Jim's pinged up an interesting question. He said, should companies employ therapists to monitor employee morale?
My first question was, how do you monitor employee morale as a therapist if you've got an organization of 500 people? But
bugs in the toilet, bugs in the coffee. No, sorry. You can imagine that's where people go. in the coffee breakout areas where people talk. You know how they talk in the over the sink in the bathroom and they talk. Sorry, I didn't mean in the like cubicles. And I'm joking, clearly. Friday, fun show. Just because you guys are being serious, Joe. But yeah, that's absolutely right.
I'm being serious. I might be mischievous, sorry.
Yes. I guess you can use those happy or not, like where you go, the little snap polls, things like that.
Yeah, a lot of organisations do pulse measures, pulse surveys, look at happiness, engagement and esteem. But and a lot of organisations provide, not therapists, but provide
psychologists, part
of the package if you need to see someone for stress. But Katrina, you said something very interesting about those conversations around the water cooler or in the bathroom, I think.
In the toilet cubicle.
Right. those conversations are actually the strongest measure of the culture and can be very damaging. It's just a few words for those people who don't bring their full selves to work, who will feel they can't. Just a few words can destroy their want to bring them to be more open, to be more honest, to be more authentic. So a therapist can't measure mental health in an organization. The organization can, and then can offer anyone to be able to get further support.
Cool.
Wow, we're out of time.
Indeed. Yeah.
As I say, personal growth never came from happiness.
But I also say happiness is an inside job. So once you've done the personal growth, you will be very happy.
Absolutely. And in terms of
happiness, personal experience, so
do not try to find a job that makes you happy, because it doesn't exist. Happiness is fleeting.
Or a relationship or anything else, by the way. It's an inside job.
The light and dark of human nature.
Exactly.
What you can do is find a job that has meaning, that has purpose. Yeah. And that is what a lot of managers should be doing, is articulating the role, the direct report's role, not in terms of their list of tasks, but in terms of their contribution to the greater purpose. That sense of meaning can do a lot for an individual's engagement. And that's also what I help.
Absolutely. Where can people find you?
Q&A.
You're not on Twitter, which is just LinkedIn?
Just LinkedIn. Yeah, Tim Sparks, QNX Talent, Sparks with an E. Q&A.
I haven't said that before. That was very polished. Wow, that went so fast. I can't believe how fast that went.
Wow, that's
it. This is going to be one hell of a blog for you to write up.
I don't even know where to start. Seriously, at certain points of that, I was just trying to consume the information. I wasn't even thinking about a question.
And I had some big pauses in this one.
Yeah.
So continuing the theme in a way, because we've been talking about happiness and things like that, clearing stuff up. Next week we have Ruth Penfold, and because it's Valentine's Day, we're having the self-love edition. Not quite sure what that means, but I'm sure it will be brilliant. You're going to tell me what it means between now and then.
Yeah, totally.
Right, hopefully she'll be on. Anyway, bless her. She's been very patient. Thank you, Tim, so much for all of that.
Thank you, Tim. I think we need to listen to the show again.
And thank you for everyone that joined in for all of your comments and questions as well. And Jim is making me a T-shirt. That makes me very happy. We shall see you all next week at the same time, which would be 3 p.m. GMT and 10 a.m. Eastern. I got it right.
Good. You did.
I always say London time and offend everybody. I'm right near Greenwich. Time's just down the road. What can I start? Anyway, thank you, everybody. Have a brilliant weekend, and we shall see you next week.
Have a great weekend, everyone. Thanks again, Tim.
Bye.
Bye.